Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Dr. Veronica Belling is an accomplished academic and author of many books. She was the librarian in the UCT and Kaplan Center libraries for 31 years, and she is an authority on Yiddish and has a wide knowledge of Judaica. She studied librarianship at Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and her academic interests are Yiddish theater, and she has also translated Liebel Feldman's Jews in Joburg. I met her in the Joburg archives where she's doing research on Levi Shalit, and I asked her to join me to tell me more about herself and as well as the reason she's here. Dr. Belling, welcome, and thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about why you're in our libraries.
Well, I specifically came to research the Yiddish, what is the last South African Yiddish newspaper that is in English known as the African Jewish newspaper, or in Yiddish, the Afrikaner Yiddische Zeitung. I'm particularly interested in the editor. By the way, the dates for the newspaper are 1931 to 1983. But I'm interested in Levi Shalit, who became the editor in 1953. He was specifically brought out to South Africa by the previous editor, whose name is Boris Gersman, and who visited the DP camps where Levi Shalit was situated at the time. He was a survivor of the Shabul ghetto in Lithuania, and Boris Gersman specifically came there to find people to write for his newspaper. And Levi Shalit did this and came out to South Africa and visited. And then in 1953, when Boris Gersman died, he was invited to become the editor. So at that point, he actually was living in Israel, but he came out to South Africa and edited this newspaper from 1953 to 1983. And I've come to research the newspaper. The newspaper is available in Cape Town at the National Library of South Africa, but only until 1957. So I was obliged to come here to the board to research the newspaper.
It's reassuring to know how well used our archives are. You wanted to say something?
Yes. No, I'm very much admiring of your archives, and particularly of your archivist, Eric Matoba, who is just amazing. He is so helpful and obliging, and he's been helping me with this newspaper, which is bound, and I've indicated pages that I need copied and extensively, and he just does this with absolute accuracy, and I highly recommend the archives at the boards, at the board, and the work that's been done by Eric.
Our archives actually is one of our hidden gems, and Eric is a true treasure. Just tell me, how popular was Yiddish at that time, and how many newspapers were there competing for the Jewish community at that time?
Well, by 1953, there was only one newspaper left. Look, the first newspaper in South Africa, and this is the most amazing thing, because I think it was also the first Yiddish newspaper in the Commonwealth of Nations, and that was in South Africa, in Johannesburg in 1890. It was published by somebody, Hoffman, and Dovbear Hoffman, and it lasted for 6 months. And it was the earliest newspaper. So the South African Jewish Chronicle only started in 1902. Sure. In other words, Yiddish newspapers predated it. And there were various other short newspapers. Recently, an article has been written in detail about this earlier period of Yiddish newspapers by somebody called William Pimlock.
Right.
And you could find it on the internet.
Again, I'm very curious because the publication closed in the 1980s. Is that indicative of not loss of Yiddish, but the, I don't know what the word is,
demise.
That's quite a strong word.
No, well, it is a strong word. I mean, you need a strong, it is really.
Was it the demise of Yiddish?
Well, not demise of Yiddish. Certainly, I think that the newspaper lasted for quite a long time, all things considered. Look, in the 1950s, you could say in South Africa, it was still a language on the street.
Okay.
1960s, 70s, it's diminishing considerably. And I think it's to be admired that the newspaper lasted that long. And it was by then the only newspaper.
Wow.
The previous newspaper was Der Afrikaner, and the board is also the only institution that has the entire Der Afrikaner, which I used for my dissertation on the history of Yiddish theater. I came up here, my children were living here at the time, and I researched it extensively at the board. Der Afrikaner, which lasted from 1911 to 1933, when it was absorbed in the African Jewish newspaper in the Afrikaner Edition Zeitung.
Which shows that our community continues to evolve and develop and grow. You teach Yiddish.
Yes.
What is the interest
in inverted commas?
What is the interest in learning Yiddish and who is interested in it?
There are a fair amount of, it's a question of nostalgia. I've been taking a group for at least 10 years in Cape Town, sponsored by the Cape Jewish Seniors. And at one stage, our group reached as much as 16 to 18 people. It shrunk over the years.
Where do you take that?
The C Point group.
Okay.
There is a much smaller group in Claremont as well.
Okay. Right. So it's in person or on Zoom?
Well, Zoom only started later. Okay. No, it was in person. There was a break during COVID, and that's when somebody had the bright idea to start doing it on Zoom. And for a month or so, we did it on Zoom every week. And then we decided that the Zoom group would be every 2 weeks, and we also were able to, by that time, to resume the in-person group.
There's nothing quite like it, is there?
Yes. And I should mention that on Zoom, I teach together with Rochelle Wiener, most important from Umhlanga, who is a product of the Johannesburg Volksschule and has a very lively, fluent Yiddish.
Wow.
She's the entertainer. And I write all the programs.
Oh, that's amazing. That's absolutely amazing.
So we seem to combine fairly well.
Is there a new interest in Yiddish among younger people?
There is, but not really in South Africa. In America, Canada, there certainly is. Yiddish is particularly strong in Melbourne in Australia. It's the only place where you can actually do Yiddish for matric. And I should mention that next May, at the end of next May 2025, there is a conference at the on Yiddish at the Kaplan Center.
Oh, that's
cool. And it's co-convened, and obviously convened by the Kaplan Center in combination with Shirley Gilbert from the University of London. And also Anna, I can never get this name right, Sternschuss from the University of Toronto, and Rivka Margolis, Professor Rivka Margolis, who is a Canadian who is now the Professor of Yiddish at Monash University in Melbourne.
Absolutely fascinating. Dr. Belling, you did one of your theses on Yiddish theatre.
Yes.
What role do you think Yiddish theatre had among Jews at that time?
Well, I'm very enthusiastic about Yiddish theatre, but in South Africa, there was never a permanent Yiddish theatre established. It started amazingly early in the 1890s. You know, Yiddish theatre was first established in 1876 in Iasi, a place called Iasi in Romania. The reason that it started in Romania, not Russia, is because there were too many laws against the Jews in Russia, so it was easier to start it in Romania. And it was started by somebody called Abraham Goldfaden, and it eventually moved back into Russia until it was banned. And then the Yiddish actors started spreading out all over the world. Obviously, most of them went to America, sometimes via London, and then America was the mecca for Yiddish theatre, but it existed all over. And theatre groups, used to travel, and they came to South Africa from the 1890s, particularly until about 1910. And the reason, 1910, they tried to establish a permanent theatre in Johannesburg, but they didn't succeed. And the reason they say is also because of the beginning of silent movies.
Mm.
And also because the rich Jews in Johannesburg wouldn't go to the Yiddish theatre. They were too snobbish, not that they couldn't understand it. And the poor Jews didn't have the money. And by the way, the Yiddish theatre, I don't know the geography of Johannesburg too well, but it was situated in the red light district.
I believe
it's right about Commissioner Street.
So it was maybe potentially compromising to be seen there.
Yes. And also to assist, the people who went to the Yiddish theatre tended to be the poor Jews.
Mm.
And the rich Jews didn't want to be associated with these poor Jewish Yiddish-speaking immigrants.
Absolutely fascinating. My last question to you is, what will happen to the research that you're doing now?
I should first of all mention that my interest in Levi Shalit is because I translated, it was a collaboration, I translated Levi Shalit's Holocaust memoir that was published in Munich in the DP camps in 1949. And this will come out, it's been published by the University Press of Alabama, and it will come out in early 2025. And that got me interested in Levi Shalit. Levi Shalit was a brilliant journalist and brilliant writer. I mean, it was very difficult to translate. I translated together with somebody called Ellen Cassidy, who's a well-known translator in America, and Andrew Castle. And we also have, I wrote an introduction, and we have an afterword by Professor Justin Cammy. I think he's from Smith College in America. And as a result, there we have his Holocaust memoirs. I wanted something about his South African work, the newspaper he edited. And this is for an article for the journal Studies in Contemporary Jewry.
It's so impressive. I'm really pleased I bumped into you, and thank you for agreeing to do an interview and learning more about the incredible work that you do. I know, Dr. Veronica Billing, you've been a name that I've seen and heard, so I'm pleased to have had a chance to meet and also explore more.
It's a pleasure.
That was Dr. Veronica Billing, academic, author, and former librarian at the UCT and Kaplan Libraries.